And it goes through to today, where we have Island Timberlands, which is owned by a company called Brookfield. Hancock Timber Resources, which is owned by Manulife, and Timber West are the three large landowners in our territory. How this becomes relevant to the work that we're doing, so, you know, if you go forward from that date to 1997, when the treaty process was put into place, the Halkominum, the six Halkominum First Nations, joined the treaty process with the expectation that, you know, we would be negotiating our traditional territory. And what we found out was that the government of Canada and the government of British Columbia had taken the view that private lands would not be on the table for negotiation. So it placed us in a very difficult position. 90-some% of our traditional territory had been granted away without our knowledge, without our consent, without our input, and without any compensation. And now the two levels of government were saying and are saying that those lands are not available to the Halkominum people for return. So we made a decision. We say that there's two streams of rights or laws that govern this area. The first is the domestic Canadian law. And we know that here in Canada that there is recognition for Aboriginal and treaty rights. That recognition is contained within the Constitution of Canada. Section 35 of the 1982 Constitution, as well as the Royal Proclamation of 1763, which is also part of the body of constitutional law. And as well, we have the common law decisions of the courts. So there is a body of law in Canada that says that First Nations have these existing Aboriginal rights and that they are in fact recognized and affirmed. The experience that we've had is there's a problem with the implementation of denial. Starting before the grant, you know, before 1870s, right from the beginning, just after Governor Douglas stepped down, that the province of British Columbia took a pretty sharp turn in their policy. During the time of Governor Douglas, 1840s, 1850s, Victoria had been actually negotiating a few treaties. So some of you may be familiar with what they refer to as the Douglas Treaties in and around Victoria. After he retired, the policy became one of denial. That there was an absolute denial that Aboriginal people had land rights. There was an absolute denial that those land rights continued to exist. The government of British Columbia argued in the courts that their framework of laws had overtaken, had assumed all of the Aboriginal rights, that Aboriginal title did not exist any longer in this province. And that attitude carried on right into, you know, when the NISCA finally went to court in a decision called the Calder decision, and the Supreme Court of Canada split. Three of the judges said the government was right. Three of the judges said the government was wrong. And the seventh judge ruled on a technicality. And the Nisga people lost that case. But it caused the government to reassess their position. Because what the courts had said is that three of the judges of the Supreme Court of Canada disagreed with the government that, in fact, Aboriginal title continued to exist, that it had not been extinguished. You then go forward to the Delgamuukw decision in the 1980s, where the Supreme Court of Canada unanimously ruled that, in fact, Aboriginal title does exist in British Columbia, that it has not been extinguished. But even in the face of all of that, there has not been any government movement towards the recognition of Aboriginal title. The latest case to go forward is out of the Tsilhqot'in territory. Went forward to the British Columbia Supreme Court. Mr. Justice Vickers ruled that, in fact, the Tsilhqot'in, after many years and many millions of dollars spent, had proven that they had title, had proven enough, had led enough evidence that they had title to a portion of their territory, but because they had said in their court pleadings that they were going to prove title to 100% of their territory, he was not able to issue them a declaration that they in fact had title. So, in spite of the fact that the domestic law under the Constitution, in spite of the fact that the Supreme Court of Canada under the common law has said that in fact title exists, First Nations people do have land rights, First Nations people do have a right to have their title recognized, the government of Canada, the government of British Columbia refused to do that. They refused to recognize title on the ground. What they say is First Nations people have to go to court and they have to prove it. So what we say is under domestic law, under domestic Canadian law, there is a serious implementation gap. There is a serious problem here. This could be part of the reflection of the problem. That Canada has no history of colonialism. So, you know, the attitudes under domestic processes, under the domestic political process, under the domestic legal process, there's some serious difficulties. So what we decided is that we would go outside of this country, that we would seek justice elsewhere, that we would go to a human rights approach. And under human rights, Indigenous human rights, under international law, there is this international system. Under the United Nations, there's general human rights, and they're contained in many, many treaties, international treaties, and international conventions. And then the latest document is the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. You know that document went forward after many years of working on that document. It went forward to the General Assembly of the United Nations. There was a vote, and there were four countries that voted against it. The United States, Australia, New Zealand, and Canada. And Canada was, in fact, one of the greatest opponents of that, as we understand, and as has been reported, that Canada actively campaigned to get other countries on side. There's also another system. The world is divided into regions, and we live in the Americas. So there is another organization, another human right or another international organization, the Organization of American States. And Canada is a member of the Organization of American States. And the Organization of American States has a charter. And under the charter, the countries that are part of that treaty have committed themselves to respecting human rights. And the other part of this is that there was a declaration, the American Declaration on the Rights and Duties of Man, which is another instrument that talks about human rights. So Canada has signed on to that. Canada is a member, and they are, we say, have some certain obligations under that. Under this system of international law, then, there's two parts, one that they would call binding, or that it's a hard law. And these are treaties and covenants and conventions, and countries that sign on to them must take steps to implement. And then there's customary international law. There's also an area that they call soft law, which are not binding in and of themselves, such as General Assembly resolutions, so the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Canada takes the position that that document is simply an aspirational document. It's not binding on Canada. Even though they have now endorsed it, you know, even though they have now said that they're prepared to support it, in our case in Washington, when we raised it, they raised the argument that it's not binding on them, that it's just an aspirational document. Declarations, of course, and then reports from committees. So I'll get into that in a little bit here.